A couple of points. We saw that there is a machlokas rishonim. What is the scope of that gemara about hinza mevarech eliminatis? Essentially, three positions. It means you don't make a bracha in the first and last place. Does it mean, no, you do make a bracha because you're still nana, but there's no zimun? Or does it talk about something completely separate from that, the inyan of Berachas HaMitzvah, as the Meiri suggests? So we went through some other Rishonim who seem to line up on one side or the other. And then that brings us back to the Rambam, because the Rambam, who does maintain that you do not make an opening or closing bracha on prohibited foodstuffs. So is that because of this Gemara? Or is it for some other reason? Is it that food that is prohibited is inherently unbrachable? It's not roi la'achila, and therefore there's no bracha on it for that reason. Yes, sir.
On that point, so yes. How is it that we jump to that Gemara as the Rambam source, and the Ravid doesn't comment at all on that, and the Ravid is commenting on the Mishnah and Brachos as the Rambam source?
How do you know that?
Because he presumes that it must be talking about Zimun. Mm-hmm. I mean, he seems to be saying, like, oh, what's the Rambam saying? It's a Tatlus. He's reading the Gemara and Brachos and the Mishnah and Brachos the wrong way, because it's obviously just talking about Zimun. That's how I was reading it. So you're saying it could be just...
I mean, I don't think that that's actually the right thing to say, because the right thing to say that Gemara, the Rambam's talk, you're saying, oh, your point is that if the Ravid is arguing about the interpretation of that Gemara, so then that means no argument that's the Rambam source. But maybe the Ravid's wrong. Or maybe that's the Machlokes, and the question is whether other sources. So, as we saw, I mean, the Rush certainly also takes that position, right? The Rush was the one we saw yesterday who made the comment that the Gemara, that same Gemara, could be read according to him, should be read according to him, to suggest that you do make a bracha. You make a bracha, but it's meis. So clearly, a lot of the Rishonim are working off the assumption that that's the battleground. The question is, though, is there maybe additional basis for the Rambam's position? So we saw a few other suggestions yesterday that maybe it has to do with a general idea that achilas iser just doesn't count. And we also saw that the Taz, by now you've seen the Taz. Right, it's an interesting Taz. This part is a warm line with Taz. We spend most of the time emphasizing that he thinks the whole concept is about shogeg. Right, that's what most of what the Taz is saying. But in one line, he references this Gemara in Bechoros, that the idea is that just like if you get sold non-kosher food unknowingly, you have a right to a full refund. So that shows you that prohibited eating is worthless. So that's the Rambam source. And even though in that din, we distinguish between the Raises and the Rabbanans, and that's how we get to the whole Mesivis. But here, we don't distinguish because Bracha is more Chomer. And then we started to say how, since Bracha is an institution, the Rabbanan, so there's more latitude for Chazal to make such a concept and say we're not applying the concept of a bracha to any Michael Isser, whether it's the Reiser or the Rabban. Hi,
sorry, just to clarify, when you say that you get a full refund for the food that's no good, how does that play itself into bracha?
So, because is the Gemara suggesting that, let's say you buy a cow and it turns out to be a nevela, or you buy, Gemara has a few examples, you buy fruit and it turns out to be tavo, or you buy wine and it turns out to be Yainessa. So in all those cases, you are entitled to all of your money back. And that's true even if you've eaten part of the food, right? So you could have said, you would have said, well, all right, listen, if I'm returning the product, so okay, I get my money back. But if I consumed, let's say, 1/10 of the product and I'm only giving back 90%, I should subtract 1/10 from the price. So what we see from there is that, no, even if you've consumed it, it's worthless. You're not obligated to pay anything, even for the food that you're not giving back. The food that you ate has no value. So that could be, as the Panamihiro says, that could be the source for the roundup. But the Panamihiro raises the question that it doesn't fit 100% because that din distinguishes between Torah law and rabbinic law. And this din of no bracha does not distinguish. You don't make a bracha whether it's an Issa D'Oraisa or an Issa D'Rabbanan. So that was his problem with this answer that he otherwise liked. But then he notes, oh wait, the Taz says the same thing. And the Taz gives an explanation that it's based on this idea, but it goes even farther than this idea. It counts Yisurim D'Rabbanan also because of a Chumra D'Bracha. So these are among some of the explanations that we saw yesterday. So what essentially emerges is basically two understandings in the Rambam primarily. Whether they are from one source or the other, but they can basically be grouped into two ways. And the Migdal Oz in the Rambam, that's how he essentially says, it's two explanations for the Rambam's position. One is Bracha Haba B'Aveira, and the other is that a Michael Isser is worthless. So Bracha Haba B'Aveira is still an ambiguous term. Right, we don't know, is that the same din as Mitzvah Haba B'Aveira? Is it an extension, because Chazal control it to make it a little broader? And concepts that we've seen so far in this sukkah that were even more machmir when a bracha is involved, so is this a more intense version of Mitzvah Haba B'Aveira? Open for debate. That's one concept, that it's because of your Aveira that there's no bracha. Or that it's because the food is inherently worthless. So what difference would it make whether you say one way or another? Can you think of any nafkaminas whether you take one explanation or the other? What do you think? Well, one could have to do with the question that the Shulchan Aruch talks about and puts out about. That what if you have to eat Michael Isser for Pikuach Nefesh purposes? Let's say you are sick and you have to eat something to save your life that is otherwise a Michael Isser. Do you make a bracha? So how does the Shulchan Aruch Paskin? Right, he discusses this in the Beis Yosef also. If you saw in Kutzal Yivav, he paskins that you do make a bracha. But he quotes, in the Beis Yosef, he quotes Rabbeinu Yeruchim. Rabbeinu Yeruchim says, you don't make a bracha in such a case. Hi.
Wouldn't it just be obvious, like if you need the food, like you need the food.
So yeah. Therefore, it's obvious that you should make a bracha?
Huh?
It's obvious that you should make a bracha?
Yeah, because like you need the food, like so.
You need
your
nana?
What?
Your nana, because you need it.
Okay.
Because you could say the opposite. Right, it's interesting, just this actually parallels some of the Pesach, you know, to draw this. First of all, when food is medicine, right, you don't make a bracha. It's if you're eating something that was purely medicinal, so we generally don't make a bracha.
Right, like if you drink water to take
so,
medicine.
Right, so water to take medicine, what about the medicine itself? Right, let's say you're taking a pill, so why don't you make a bracha on that pill? Because it's not being eaten for halal purposes, it's medicine. Now, when you take chicken soup to feel better, right, so then you do make a bracha, because even though you may be motivated medicinally, but still it's considered to be food. So you do make a bracha on that. But here, the question is, what if the chicken soup was treif chicken soup? So should we say that that's like medicine, and it loses any status as food, so you have to eat it to save your life, but it's not something you make a bracha on? Or do we say that, no, that once you're obligated to eat it to save your life, so it's still food. So it seems like that issue should revolve around the question of what's the Rambam's basis. If it's a bracha haba b'aveira, so it's no aveira, you have to eat it, so it's not an aveira, so then what are you worried about? But if the issue is that achilas iser is not called achila, so then, okay, that might be true here as well, even though you are justified and mandated in what you're doing. But lamaisa, this is medicine, even though it's a pork sandwich, but it's medicine, and therefore There's no bracha. Moshe?
Can you be machriya between those two possibilities by saying that the same way medicine, you wouldn't eat it unless you need it for to make you feel better, you would also not eat this non-kosher food unless you need it?
Well, that seems to be one
like medicine.
Right, that's one side. You know, that's essentially how Rabbi Yerucham understands it. That basically, it's like, you know, somebody who's being enforced, and it only has a medicinal role. It's interesting. I mentioned Pesach a second ago, just to draw the parallel. So it comes up the question of chametz medicines. That there is a whole issue that often the medicine that might be chametz is in a form that normally wouldn't qualify to violate chametz. It's not the kederach hafula, etc. So it should be a problem. But Rishonim right, the Rosh Hashanah is right, that even if it's not kederach hafula, if you choose to eat something, so then that's called achshavei. You have given it importance. You have made it significant by your decision to do this. So Rav Moshe and others have tshuvas where they talk about medicine, and they say the svar shouldn't apply to medicine. Because, yeah, if you pick some exotic food and you eat it in an abnormal way, but you decide to do it, so then you could say, all right, that's achshavei, you have granted significance here. But if it's medicine, you're eating it because you have to. So there's no achshavei that's associated with that. This is one of the big discussions in the medicine on Pesach issue. It's also relevant to the concept of Chatzi Shir we've mentioned in other contexts, because some understand that the reason Chatzi Shir is Pater in general, the reason if you have something that is too small is Pater, is because it lacks Hashivas, it lacks significance. And the Chacham Tzvi explains the reason that it's Aser, even though it's Pater, is because of Achshavei, is because even though it's not significant, if you decide to have this, you decide to have a little Hershey's Kiss made out of pork, you are granting it significance. So that makes it usher, at least on some level. So with chametz, that comes, chametz and medications, that comes up also, because it's very often a small amount, the chatzi shir of chametz. So the question is, okay, but what about achshavei? So to that, the response again is, no, but medicine, you're not doing because you are interested in it. You're doing it because you have to. So even if you didn't think it was significant, you would take it. So here again, so what exactly is the nature of this trade food that you eat to save your life? Is it something that you get a bracha because the mice is food as opposed to medicine? Or no, you're only eating it because you have to, so therefore, and it's here of the fact that it's not considered to be viable halakhic food because it's a trade, so should it be treated like medicine? There shouldn't be a bracha at all. There's that famous story, I forgot the details, about someone in Europe who was told by a doctor that they have to eat pork in order to save their lives. And they're a very religious person who would never have a chazer in a million years, but now had to. So he decided that, okay, if he's going to have this, all right, but it has to be shechted kedasu kedin. So they shechted the pig. And then when they shechted it, they had a shayla about the shechita. So they went to the rav and they asked the shayla about the shechita and the pig. So he looked at the issue and it wasn't really a problem inside. Said, but nonetheless, he says, you can't say the word kosher on a pig. You can't say it's kosher. That story is often used as a mashal for other things, you know, not necessarily about animal kashers. But here, we're talking about it literally. So the question is, so the person who literally has to eat chazer, is that something you can say kosher? Is that something you can say that it's brachable? Or if you say, no, all right, you have to do this, because nefesh, you have to eat this, but we can't say a bracha on a pig, it doesn't make sense. So that's essentially the machlokas here. And that's what seems to be a debate between Shulchan Aruch and the Rebbeinu Yerucham, but the tzak of Shulchan Aruch is that you do make a bracha in such a case. There is a fascinating discussion in the Sefer Piskei Tshuva, not to be confused with the Piskei Tshuva on the bottom of the Shulchan Aruch Yerideya, which is a different Sefer. There's actually a couple of Sfarim with similar titles. This is a small Sefer called Piskei Tshuva, I think it's probably available online, which has a few fascinating discussions about this. And he asks the following question. So let's say you have some completely kosher food, Latin, Mahadran, and Apollo Israel, Shmita free, non gebrachs, perfectly kosher item. But for whatever reason, you fail to make a bracha. So you choose not to make a bracha. Says the Piskei Tshuva, an interesting thing. So maybe we should say that he shouldn't make a bracha achrona either. Why? Where's he coming from? Why do you think he says that? Yeah, well, in this case, if you didn't make a bracha rishona, you shouldn't make a bracha achrona. Who's up first? Okay.
It's like it's stolen.
Ah, okay. Is that what you want to say?
And therefore, be bracha about the bear.
Ah, you hear the word? That the Gemara says in brachos and daf lamed hay that also the hanus ba'olam hazeh below bracha. So for the person to eat without a bracha, so that should be an iser. So is that any different than eating a chazer? Setting aside what level of iser it is, but is that any different than all the other things around on lists? You hear his point? So what do you think about that? Does that follow? If you ate something without a bracha, you shouldn't make a bracha achrona. You agree? You disagree?
Still got mana, so you should think for the mana.
So that you sound like the right, but what about according to the Rambam? It's an interesting one, right? Now just to throw in one other element, this whole discussion of what exactly is the issur of eating without a bracha. So just to throw in some background here, she mentions also there is a Rabbi Akiva Eiger, a very interesting position of Rabbi Akiva Eiger on bracha sadaf yud aleph, where he's actually based on a marsha in Arvei Pesachim. He quotes the marsha in Arvei Pesachim, where he says as follows. He says, we know that we normally have a rule of safek brachos lahakil. So let's say you're about to eat something and you're not sure whether you're chayiv in a bracha. So we should say safek brachos lahakil. You leave the bracha out. That's how we generally assume, right? That's what you learned in school. However, says Rabbi Akiva Eiger, says he thinks it can't make sense that you have to say that safek brachos lahakil applies in other situations, but not in this situation, because here, if you want to eat the food, you have to make a bracha. If you don't make a bracha, it's going to be achilas iser. So therefore, you're always going to be chayiv to make the bracha. So we'll have to say safek brachos lahachmir in that case. And that something brachos lahakel, maybe bracha achrona, bracha samitzvos, other things. But bracha rishona on food, you have to say safek lahachmir. Now that is not the accepted halacha. And we assume safek brachos lahakel by bracha rishona also. And Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach has a truth about this, and others talk about this, and they explain that no, it doesn't make sense, because the iser is going to be contingent on the chiyuv of bracha. So first we got to figure out the rules for the chiyuv of bracha, and if there's a chiyuv of bracha, so then to eat without it would be awesome. But if we can't clarify there's a chiyuv of bracha in the first place, so then it doesn't make sense to say they're both true, to say that it's also to eat without a bracha, and we have a suffix about the chiyuv bracha. If you have a suffix about the chiyuv, and it tells you therefore some of the bracha's lakel, so then it's not usher to eat without a bracha. So that's just important background, because the parameters of eating without a bracha are somewhat open to discussion. So whether we're talking about somebody with a suffix about whether to make a bracha, whether that's included or not is going to connect to that whole discussion. But let's say a person bemazed it. He just decides, you know what, I'm tired of this whole bracha thing, and I'm not going to do it. I'm going to just eat without a bracha. And then once he tastes some food, he realizes, wow, I really am quite grateful to God for creating this. So now I want to make a bracha achrona. So that's the Piskei Tshuva's question. Should we say that he should not be allowed to make a bracha achrona because it is considered to be a meichel iser? So none of you have an opinion about this. Do you think that this is comparable? Do you think that eating without a bracha and eating chazer, again, setting aside whether what the onesh would be for each one, but just in any sense of the word, are they comparable? So last time we went this way, let's go this way. So, Zach?
I don't think so, because
Chazer itself is like, it's Aser by itself. But
okay.
You not saying the bracha is, you're doing that. Meaning you're personally doing something that's making it Aser, right? That you're not allowed to eat without a bracha. But
okay,
Chazer
so
itself
now,
is already Aser. So you're having a part in not saying the bracha. But by Chazer, you have no part in if it's Kmotzer or Aser. It's,
okay.
It's
so that distinction now, if you want to get a little briskified in making that distinction. Well, if you were a little more brisk oriented, what language would you use? Chefta Shalisser versus Gavra. Now, here's a little bit of important Chefta Gavra history relates to this topic. That the terms Chefta Gavra, which is our basic language here in Yeshiva, and we know is strongly associated with brisk. So sometimes one could perhaps cynically get the feeling that they're somewhat overused. A little. And that maybe they seem like they could flip either way. Right? That you could call something either a Isser Gavra or Isser Chefza, depending on how you want to focus. So if you're afraid to say that out loud, you should just know that the Avinezer did. The Avinezer has a tshuva, where he talks about this, and he says, L'chaorah, the language is very flexible, it says, because you could say on anything that it's an Isser Chefza because the item is Aser to you, and it's an Isser Gavra because you're not allowed to consume the item. So how do we decide when we call something an Isser Chefza or an Isser Gavra? So this issue of Chefza Gavra, one great Acharon who actually said, hold on a second, stop, let's try to determine what we're talking about. So, because in Shas it comes up once, really. Like this phrase, where does this come up? Nedarim. Nedarim dot base. The Gemara distinguishes between Nedarim and Shvuas based on such terminology. A neder, a person asers a chepta to himself or to others, and a Shvuah, a person prohibits an action or commands himself on an action, and therefore the Gemara calls that a din of the gavra. So, that's what we have in Shas. To apply that to other things, we don't have in the Talmud itself. So the Avinezer has this tshuva where he says, come on, so it seems like everything could be called either a chet or gavra, depending on how you want to phrase it. So he has a different kind of hesber there. It's interesting. He says that essentially the notion of an Isser Gavra is something that is bad for you. This is beneath you, essentially. And the Nisr Chafza is something that you are beneath it, so to speak, like it is too holy for you. So he has, this is not the only way to see things, this is the language he wants to use for that Gemara in the Dharm. And he says, so essentially Hektish is a Nisr Chafza, it is too good for you, so to speak. While other things tend to be Surei Gavra, that you are too good for them. So the whole idea of a Neder, the Gemara, which we learn himself as Nedarim, learned that a neder specifically is linked to hektish. So that's the idea, that a neder is something that is about hektish, so that's called an Isser Chefza, while other things are Isser Gavra. So in any event, they're not tshuva. It's in Hilchos Brachos, it's in the Lamed Zayin. So the Piskei Tshuva here quotes that Avinezer. And he says that that is a distinction here, which may be what Zach is getting at, right, that other averos perhaps are about the chetza. Let's say you stole the food, so there is something in the chetza. But a bracha is about you. It's your obligation in relation to the food. So that would seem to be different than other averos. Right? So if you're going to have chazer, if you're going to have a tevel, you're going to have chelev, so the chetza is inherently bad. But if you're going to have food without a bracha, the food is neutral. It's just about how you relate to the food. So you could come at that from the other direction also. And you could say that, and this is how the Piskei Tshuva suggests, he thinks this is the difference between the Rush and the Rambam. Like you'll recall, so the Rambam says you don't make a bracha on prohibited food. And the Rush says, no, like the Ravid, you don't make a Zimun, but you do make a Brach. So says the Piskei Tshuva, he thinks what the Rush is saying, it's really coming at it from the other direction, thinks what the Rush is saying is that the bracha is for the sake of the food. So the food doesn't care that you did nadeira in getting there. So why not make a bracha? Or that you're going to do an aveira in eating it? Why not make a bracha? While the Rambam sees the bracha as a personal obligation. And therefore, if you are doing an aveira in the context of eating this food, so then that bracha is not going to be appropriate. Which is an interesting way to look at it. It's not the only way to look at things, but it's an interesting way to look at it. So he gives a few other examples where you can raise this question also. One should come to mind immediately because it's very negaya to this year's Limud. What other example could you give? Osha?
I have a question.
Well, so before that, what other example could you give? What about... What was that we're learning? Yeah. So what about eating outside the sukkah? Let's say if you eat outside the sukkah inappropriately, so should we say that that's like eating treif? Or should we say that, no, the food is good, but you're doing it in an usher way? So this all seems to connect, also separate from his whole analysis about the Rambam and the Rush, this seems to connect to the question of, is the Rambam's reasoning mitzvah habavi aveira, and bracha habavi aveira? Or is it the meichel is not roi for a bracha? So if you eat without a bracha, or if you eat outside the sukkah, the food is fine. Like, this is the flip side of eating tray food to save your life. When you eat tray food to save your life, so then the food is not roi, but you're not doing an aveira. And when you eat without a bracha, it's the opposite. The food is roi, but there's an aveira in eating. So what exactly is the determinant factor? He throws in another element. What about eating without mekilas yadayim? So does that fall into such a category? Similar to eating without a bracha, similar to eating outside the sukkah. So if there is a halachic problem in how you're doing it, but the food is roi, so how does that fit into the discussion? Just to get a little more complicated, in the next siman he throws in another piskei tshuva, he throws in another discussion. What if you eat, this is just to really get very technical, let's say you eat a kezias of kosher bread, but you're not really full. So you want to have a little more. So you decide to throw in some treif bread. So now you're chayiv in benching me the rabbanan because you ate a kezias of food, but you got to the chi of daraisa of kidei tzviya through non-kosher food. So how would that affect us? Yechayiv derabanan benat daraisa? Or does all become one thing? So that's an interesting technical issue. Just mention one more point, and again we're going to transition from this back into general mitzvah of the aveira derabanan issues tomorrow, and Bli Neder will have certainly more Maamar Kamos for you for that. But so lahalacha, what do we say about all this? So there is a tshuva in the Shari Ezra, that Ezra Basri, is a prominent Sfardi Dayan. Says Lamaisa, this is a machlokas Rishon. In terms of bracha Rishon, I mean, the question is hard to really address. If you have to eat the isser, so then the Shulchan Aruch Pasuk, you should make a bracha. But somebody who's just eating b'aveira, so that shaila doesn't come up so much, but somebody who is eating b'aveira and then afterwards, let's say he did it for shogeg, and then the question is to bench. So he assumes that it's a suffik, and because this machlok is Rishonim, and therefore one should not bench. So now you may say, hold on a second. Because the suffix, you shouldn't bench? That's not right. Why is that not so right? Because what? Suffix daraisa, right? Isn't benching the exception to this rule? Because benching is daraisa. So we should say suffix b'chumra. So he says that, no, you'd say suffix daraisa b'chumra when you know you have to bench and you're not sure if you did or not, that's the case of the Mari Gurdish example. You know that you're obligated to bench and you're not sure if you benched, so then you have to go back and bench again because Safek Dereis Lachom. But if you're not sure that there's a chiyuv of benching in the first place, so then you would say Safek Lachulu. Now that's a little bit debatable. There is clearly such a distinction in Hilchos Fekis between the Cheskes Chiyuv and no Cheskes Chiyuv. When you know there's a mitzvah and you're not sure if it's done and you don't know if there's a mitzvah in the first place. Whether it's clear that applies here, the situation of Machlokes Rishonim, it's an interesting conclusion, but that's how he portrayed it.
Doesn't that same distinction also come up by the Brachos for Tal Torah in the morning if you stay up all night?
So there we say,
if you're not sure if you know you have to say it, you didn't say it, so you have to say it. You have to, but I think the discussion on the Shachar and Shabura, if you're not sure,
big argument. Maybe we'll talk about that before Shabura.
Yeah, it's like you're not sure if you have the chiyuv in the first place, so then there may be more room to be needed.
There's a lot of nuances to that discussion. The nature of the machlokes and some of it. If you want, you know, it's a good shulis topic, so I think the shulis are ready in May, but maybe closer to shulis, we're happy to take a look at some of the questions about that because there's a lot of detail that affects that question. Okay, so to quickly recap, so we basically focused on this point of whether it's two dinim, whether it's two possible explanations of the Rambam, which is a shorthand because there's really many different ways to say each part of it, and still a lot of open questions, but roughly speaking, is it bracha haba b'aveiro, or is it meichel she'eino roi? And we discussed a lot of nuances about that, but basically two major issues. One is, what if you have to eat the meichel issur to save your life? So then, do you make a bracha or not? Because on the one hand, it's not roi, but on the other hand, there's no aveira. And the flip side, what if you eat food that is roi, but there is an aveira in eating it, such as without a bracha, such as outside the sukkah, such as without nekilas sedayim, how does that fit in? And we got into some of the background about chetz gavra and how that's a particular aspect of this discussion and how the historical development of those concepts are tied into this discussion in a fundamental way. Okay, so again, tomorrow, mitzvah b'aveir d'rabbanan, and I will take it from there, and everyone should have a wonderful day. How are you?
Baruch Hashem, doing good.